Chapter 99. General whom he has called up. Spirit ironic, he bids Lebedoyer to speed away along the whole sweep of the surging line, and there announce to the breath-shotten bands who toil for a chimera trustfully, with 70 pounds of luggage on their loins, that the dim Prussian masses seen afar are Grouchy's 33,000, come to clinch a victory. Spirit of the pities, but nay demurs. Spirit ironic, nay holds indignantly that such a feint is not war-worthy. Says Napoleon then, snuffing anew, with sour sardonic scowl, that he is choiceless. Spirit sinister, excellent emperor. He tops all human greatness, in that he to lesser grounds of greatness adds the crime of being without a conscience.
Lebedoyer and orderlies start on their mission. The false intelligence is seen to spread by the excited motion of the columns, and the soldiers can be heard shouting as their spirits revive. Wellington is beginning to discern the features of the coming onset when Colonel Fraser rides up.
Fraser, we have just learned from a deserting captain, one of the carabineers who charged of late, that an assault which dwarfs all instances the whole Imperial Guard in welded weight is shortly to be made.
Wellington, for your smart speed my thanks. My observation is confirmed. We'll hasten now along the battle line, to staff, a swiftest means for giving orders out whereby to combat this.
The speaker, accompanied by Hill, Uxbridge, and others all now looking as worn and besmirched as the men in the ranks proceed along the lines, and dispose the brigades, to meet the threatened shock. The infantry are brought out of the shelter they have recently sought, the cavalry stationed in the rear, and the batteries of artillery hitherto kept in reserve are moved to the front. The last act of the battle begins. There is a preliminary attack by Donzelet's columns, combined with swarms of sharpshooters, to the disadvantage of the English and their allies.
Wellington has scanned it closely.
Fitzroy Somerset, his military secretary, comes up.
Wellington, what casualty has thrown its shade among the regiments of Nassau, to shake them so?
Somerset, the Prince of Orange has been badly struck a bullet through his shoulder so they tell, and Kolmansegg has shown some signs of stress.
Kincaird's tried line wanes leaner and more lean whittled to a weak skein of skirmishers.
The 27th lie dead.
Wellington, ah yes I know.
While they watch developments, a cannon shot passes and knocks Somerset's right arm to a mash. He is assisted to the rear. Ney and Friant now lead forward the last and most desperate assault of the day, in charges of the old and middle guard, the attack by Donzelet and Alex further east still continuing as a support. It is about a quarter past eight, and the midsummer evening is fine after the wet night and morning, the sun approaching its setting in a sky of gorgeous colors. The picked and toughened guard, many of whom stood in the ranks at Austerlitz and Wagram, have been drawn up in three or four echelons, the foremost of which now advances up the slopes to the Allies' position. The others follow at intervals, the drummers beating the as the charge.
Chorus of rumors, aerial music, twice 30 throats of couchant canonry ranked in a hollow curve, too close their blaze upon the advancing files wait silently like two black bulls at gaze.
The guard approaches nearer and more near. The touch hole moves each match of smoky sheen.
The ordnance roars.
The van ranks disappear, as if wiped off the scene.
The aged Friant falls as it resounds.
Ney's charger drops his fifth on this sore day its rider from the quivering body bounds and forward foots his way.
The cloven columns tread the English height, seize guns, repulse battalions rank by rank, while horse and foot artillery heavily bite into their front and flank.
It nulls the power of a flesh-built frame to live within that zone of missiles.
Back the old guard, staggering, climbs to whence it came.
The fallen define its track.
The second echelon of the Imperial Guard has come up to the assault. Its columns have borne upon Halkett's right. Halkett, desperate to keep his wavering men firm, himself seizes and waves the flag of the 33rd, in which act he falls wounded. But the men rally. Meanwhile the 52nd,
covered by the 71st, has advanced across the front and charges the Imperial Guard on the flank. The third echelon next arrives at the English lines and squares, rushes through the very focus of their fire, and seeing nothing more in front, raises a shout. Imperial Guard, the Emperor. It's victory. Wellington, stand up, guards. Form line upon the front face of the square. 2,000 of Maitland's guards, hidden in the hollow roadway, thereupon spring up, form as ordered, and reveal themselves as offensive-leveled firelocks 4 deep. The flints click in a multitude, the pans flash, and volley after volley is poured into the bare-skinned figures of the masked French, who kill Colonel Doyle in returning fire.
Wellington, now drive the fellows in. Go on, go on. He will do it now.
Colburn converges on the French guard with the 52nd, and the former splits in 2-2 as the climax comes. Adam, Maitland, and Colburn pursue their advantage. The Imperial columns are broken, and their confusion is increased by grape shot from Bolton's battery.
Campbell, disorder next. Vivian's hussars are to support and bear against the cavalry towards Belle Alliance. Go let them know.
Sir C. Campbell departs with the order. Soon Vivian's and Vandeleur's light horse are seen advancing, and in due time the French cavalry are rolled back. Wellington goes in the direction of the hussars with Uxbridge. A cannon shot hisses past.
Uxbridge, starting, I have lost my leg, by God.
Wellington, by God, and have you.
A the window the shot blew past the withers of my Copenhagen like the foul sweeping of a witch's broom. Aha, they are giving way.
While Uxbridge is being helped to the rear, Wellington makes a sign to Salton, colonel of the 1st Foot Guards.
Salton, shouting, boys, now's your time. Forward and win. French voices, the guard gives way, we are beaten.
They recede down the hill, carrying confusion into Napoleon's center just as the Prussians press forward at a right angle from the other side of the field. Napoleon is seen standing in the hollow beyond La Haye Sainte, alone, except for the presence of Count Flahault, his aide-de-camp. His lips move with sudden exclamation. Spirit of the years, he says, how all is lost. The clocks of the world strike my last empery hour. Towards La Haye Sainte the French of Donzelet and Alex, who are fighting Kempt, Pack, Cruz, and Lambert, seeing what has happened to the old and middle guard, lose heart and recede likewise, so that the whole French line rolls back like a tide. Simultaneously the Prussians are pressing forward at Papelotte and La Haye. The retreat of the French grows into a panic.
French voices despairingly, we are betrayed.
Wellington rides at a gallop to the most salient point of the English position, halts, and waves his hat as a signal to all the army. The sign is answered by a cheer along the length of the line.
Wellington, no cheering yet, my lads, but bear ahead, before the inflamed face of the West out there dons blackness. So you'll round your victory.
The few aides that are left unhurt dart hither and thither with this message, and the whole English host, and the allies advance in an ordered mass down the hill except some of the artillery, who cannot get their wheels over the bank of corpses in front. Trumpets, drums, and bugles resound with the advance. The streams of French fugitives as they run, are cut down and shot by their pursuers, whose clothes and contracted features are blackened by smoke and cartridge biting, and soiled with loam and blood. Some French blow out their own brains as they fly. The sun drops below the horizon, while the slaughter goes on.
Spirit of the pities, is this the last estrelon of a moil for mortal man's effacement? Spirit ironic, warfare, mere, plied by the managed for the managers, to wit. By frenzied folks who profit not for those who profit all. Spirit of the pities, between the jars of these who live, I hear uplift and move the bones of those who placidly have lain within the sacred garths of yon gray fane's Nivelles, and Plancenoit, and brain lallowed beneath the unmemoried mounds through deedless ears their dry jaws quake colon what sabaoth is this, that shakes us in our unobtrusive shrouds,
as though our tissues did not yet abhor the fevered feats of life? Spirit ironic. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.